This is Nicholas Payton.
We just did a version of Miles Davis and Gil Evans' Sketches of Spain. It was recorded in Basel, Switzerland with the Symphony Orchestra Basel.
And how did you end up working with those guys? How did the whole project come together?
I was originally contracted to perform my first symphonic work, which is called the Black American Symphony. So I initially had no plans of performing or recording Sketches of Spain, actually. They wanted to tie it into a larger concept and do music from Duke Ellington and Miles Davis, as well as my symphony. So they titled the performance Miles, Duke, and Nick, and I performed Sketches of Spain and my Black American Symphony.
When you're tackling a piece like Sketches of Spain, which has been so definitively done by Miles Davis, how do you go about differentiating your approach from it?
Well, we procured the arrangements from the Gil Evans estate, and they're actually transcriptions of the original. I'm not sure. I'm going to assume that the actual Gil Evans scores don't exist, because I would assume the family would have them. So this is basically from someone listening and writing the orchestration out. But it's the same exact orchestration. The things that differ is our interpretation and my solos and improvisation. Yeah.
And have you played with a sort of a chamber orchestra like this before? I mean, how do you go about adapting your approach to the music to playing with a bigger group?
I mean, it doesn't differ in terms of my function. I mean, as a trumpeter, I'm used to functioning as a solo voice. What sets this apart is that the piece is not structured around any other soloist. So, you know, in a normal group situation, someone, I might play a solo, play the melody, play a solo, and someone else would play. But I'm playing pretty much the entirety of the 40 minutes. There are no breaks. So that in itself is a challenge, to have the horn to your lips 40 minutes. It's the equivalent of running a 25-mile marathon. Yeah. The level of endurance you have to constantly be playing. I mean, I have maybe seconds here and there where I'm taking a break, but I'm pretty much playing the whole time. And the arc of the piece doesn't happen until Soleil, which is the very end of the piece, where this big crescendo. So you really have to pace yourself, knowing that, you know, as much as you might play here in the beginning of the piece for the first 30 minutes, that you're not even near the peak yet. So, and to have played that, take an intermission, and then to perform my whole Black American Symphony, you know, in one evening, you know, was pretty challenging.
You mentioned briefly the Black American Symphony, which is a full-fledged orchestral work that you've written. Can you tell me how that came about?
I was commissioned to write it by the Prague Symphony Orchestra. And it was in the wake of the BAM movement. For those who are not familiar, BAM is an acronym for Black American Music, that was spurred on by a post that I wrote a couple years ago called On Why Jazz Isn't Cool Anymore. It's basically shunning the name jazz and speaking against the constructs of how our Black music is divided up into R&B, hip-hop, and all these marketing categories that don't serve the music. And jazz specifically, which is of dubious origin at best, but it's a derogatory term. It has derogatory historical and racial connotations, and I'm not fond of the word. And many musicians over the years have not been, from Sidney Bechet to Duke Ellington, Miles Davis, and the like. So in the wake of that piece and the firestorm it sort of ignited, unbeknownst to me, I didn't necessarily plan for it to have the impact that it did, but it did. I wrote a piece sort of based on something that the composer Dvorak wrote, which he was brought over here to New York to teach at a conservatory. And upon his arrival in America, he said, well, you brought me here, but basically you all have here all that you need for music and the Negro melodies that are created by the Negroes and the natives. Normally when Black artists work with orchestras and do projects with strings, it's a way of legitimizing them by working within a European construct. And my idea was to take something that is closely associated with the European aesthetic, but solely rely on Black melodies, Black feel, black harmony, and so forth.
It seems like whenever a jazz musician works with an orchestra or writes a composition for orchestra or opera, there's a lot of people having the argument about, is this jazz, is it classical or orchestral music? And it just always seems like such a boring question. You know, it's what it is. It's its own music.
Yeah, I don't, that's why I don't even like the term jazz, because even just within that, people argue about what is and what isn't jazz. So my vibe is just shun the name, mm-hmm. Because it's not jazz. It was not jazz at its inception. The musicians didn't call it that. And I think it does a disservice to the art and the artists and the mm-hmm. audience.
Do you have a word you prefer to use?
Black American music.
Mm-hmm. And I assume that's a very broad term for
it. Because, Herbie Hancock could have been neighbors and gone to the same school with Maurice White. So this idea of somebody being a jazz musician, like we're musicians. And to me, the black aesthetic is more based on genealogy and lineage as opposed to these kind of categorical assumptions. So I'm a musician and I play music, and I express that in a multitude of ways, not just some idea of what jazz is supposed to be, whatever that is. And how are you going to call the music of Louis Armstrong and say that's jazz, and the music of Count Basie, which sounds different, the music of Charlie Parker, which is completely different, John Coltrane, and in many instances, these artists didn't necessarily like each other's music. I think it's a disservice to call it jazz, and it doesn't really speak to the cultural ties and the music, the place from which it comes.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier your blog post on why jazz isn't cool anymore. You're a very active blogger, and you write a lot of stuff about racial politics in particular. Why is that important to you to write about?
Because I'm black.
Yes.
And yeah. I deal in a world of racism and these kind of constructs, And I think it's important to, as an artist, artists have typically been ones to speak on these types of issues. Why it has become increasingly popular that artists don't have a voice and don't speak to these issues, I would attribute that to a lot of the lack of awareness of these types of things in social circles. I think humankind looks to the artist to hold up a mirror to the ills of society. And when we don't do that, to me, we're not doing our jobs. I mean, the music is just a conduit. I don't play music for music's sake. I play music to connect with people and to uplift and enlighten people. And there are many ways to do that. Mm-hmm. And the essays I write is just another facet of my artistry. I don't view it any different.
What's the most recent post you've written?
Well, today I wrote a post on why it's not cool for non-blacks to say the N-word.
Was there something in particular that spurred that?
The whole Richie Incognito thing of him addressing Jonathan Martin, the epithet in the locker room, and this whole argument that black people constantly find themselves up against of having to justify why they can use it and why someone else can't. And basically that every group of people has things that is cool within their circle that is not cool for someone outside to say. It's cool for somebody to talk about their mother, but you can't talk about my mama. So, I mean, to me, it's just like basic logic. So, I mean, I elaborated a bit more on that in on the piece, and you can check it out.
Yeah. You've been playing the trumpet for ages since you were how old?
Professionally, since I was 10 or 11, but I've been playing the trumpet since I was 4, and I've been playing music mm-hmm. before that.
After that long, what are the things that still excite you about the music that really get your heart racing?
Passion, the love of it, the never-ending quest to be better, to play for people and to watch the transformative powers of music, to see someone and to hear that, I've had people come to me after a show with tears in their eyes because they were so changed that maybe they had a bad day and the music brought them into a space, to see how you can affect people like that and to inject beauty in the world, to me is really why I do this. I get paid to travel, but I'll do that for free,
So your composition we were talking about, the Black American Symphony, that's written for a full orchestra,
right? It's a full 73-piece orchestra, in addition to my band, my quartet of bass, drums, and percussion. And I played trumpet, sang, as well as played piano and Fender Rhodes.
So is it a little like a concerto for a jazz band, where the band has soloistic passages and the rest of the orchestra is the backdrop?
Yeah, I have each movement features someone or a group of people. So yeah, everybody in the core band gets a feature at some point, and then there are parts with that feature various sections of the orchestra and whatnot. Like there's one part that's kind of like a harp concerto as well. So yeah, I love the textures and the colors. It's just like going from, you know, small ensemble to full symphony orchestra is the difference between, you know, having a primary colors and then someone giving you the 64 box of Crayolas.
Yeah. Is this the first time you've written for orchestra?
That's my first time, but yeah. I plan to do more in the future.
I assume it really opens up a lot of options that you don't normally have.
Yeah, because it's just a lot more to work with, and the possibilities are just endless.
Yeah. Did you stick with a sort of a traditional four-movement symphonic form, or did you go in your own direction?
This is six movements, this piece, yeah. You know, there are some ballads in there. There's one waltz, one sort of, if you will, Latin-ish type feel. I kind of hate that word, but one with a New Orleans feel, and then it goes into a Brazilian thing at one point. I try to cover like a lot of ground and a lot of different areas of the diaspora of like African rhythms and the transmutation of how that affected the West from South America, Central America, and up to North America. The last piece is kind of funky, and it's like an homage to like Michael Jackson and like Earth, Wind, and Fire. And there's even like a small rap hip hop section in a few pieces, actually. So I used the totality or as much of the diaspora of Black American music as possible without it seeming contrived and forced.
Yeah. And you said you're looking to record and release a version of that piece?
It's already been recorded.
Oh, it already has.
It just needs to be mixed.
Has that ever been performed here in Louisiana?
Not yet.
Any plans to make that happen?
Yeah, if LPO, if you're listening, let's do it.
Excellent. Well, the album's called Sketches of Spain,
yeah.
And it's available now.
Yeah.
Nicholas Payton, thank you very much for talking with me.
My pleasure.